Good evening and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program here on October 16th, 2014. I'm your host, David Katzmeier, coming to you with a very special program tonight. We have Dr. Elliot Maynard on the Masterfield Paradigm, Future Science Technology, something that is here today and how it's here today and where it's taking us, as well as a look as where we're coming from. We're going to be discussing just a world of wonderful topics. Before we get to Dr. Maynard, I want to tell you a little bit about tonight's guest. Dr. Maynard has done extensive field research on tropical marine ecosystems and on the behavior of coral reef fishes and invertebrates. He studied tropical biology and rainforest ecology at the Organization for Tropical Studies in Costa Rica with renowned global forestry expert Dr. Leslie Holdridge, and subsequently went on to do pioneering research in the field of giant freshwater shrimp agriculture in Florida and Puerto Rico. That's aquaculture. Let's pronounce that correctly. And in 1980-1981, Elliot worked with a research scientist at the Kuwait Institute for Scientific Research. We played a key role in the project management, development of advanced aquaculture systems, and future food resources. In Kuwait, he worked with 1,200 scientists and technical specialists from around the world. In 1989, following a decade of pioneering work of giant freshwater shrimp aquaculture in Florida and Puerto Rico, Mr. and Mrs. Maynard turned their attention to Native American education, working as education specialists for Hopi Tribe of Arizona. Their efforts resulted in a comprehensive set of goals and standards for the then new $22 million Hopi Junior Senior High School, as well as a unique Hopi cultural curriculum, which integrated Hopi and conventional Western worldviews into the existing educational system. During this time period, Elliot began developing a futuristic educational system called the University of the Future Project. Other subsequent projects included integration of alternative medical systems with conventional medical protocols and new approaches to thinking and problem solving, working within a quantum field. Now, there's something that is bridging from where we're coming from to where we're going. And Dr. Elliot Maynard is certainly a leader in this. And I want to welcome him to our show tonight. If I may, Dr. Maynard, I'd like to ask you at this wonderful time to do an interview about a new book that's so new, it is just coming out now. I'm talking about your work, Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World. So my first two questions, Dr. Maynard, is there anything about yourself that you would like to tell us that I didn't cover in our introduction? And question number two, can you tell us a little bit about your new book that's going to be coming out very soon?
Yes. As to myself, I have to say that after many, many years of being in the educational system, conventional education and graduate school in many different disciplines, and also in the scientific and business communities, that I've learned a great deal of what I have written about and what I have, you might call, wisdom in the School of Hard Knocks. In other words, it's important to learn in spite of the system sometimes. The system is great, but you will find that born leaders and people who have just a little bit of insight into getting an edge on others will also learn in spite of the system. That may be an inelegant way of putting it, but I think you understand that.
Yes. Yes, quite true.
As to the new book, Brave New Mind, Living in the Future Science World, essentially it's it can be perceived as a new operating system for the human consciousness. I know you've discussed the cycles of history and the cycles of conquest and disasters and recoveries, and this book is all about many, many different facets, 25 keys to enlightenment, if you will. Enlightenment being simply the gaining of wisdom. This is not really new. It just has, enlightenment is kind of a new name for it. So these 25 keys involve the interfacing of technology as we know it and consciousness technology. Now, consciousness technology also includes such things as traditional medicine, which has existed for thousands of years, whereas modern medicine has only existed for a couple of hundred years.
Sorry.
And it's a bit arrogant, perhaps, for humans to think that they can overcome something that's really helped the survival of the human race, the indigenous medicine, for thousands and thousands of years.
Quite true. And we tend to think that what is working for us at the time, specifically in what we're working on, is the way. And we think that should be imposed upon everything around us, whether we understand it or not. But as early as the 1960s, psychologist B.F. Skinner told us that we need a new technology of behavior. And he was almost a half generation ahead of his time, because as we are leaving the industrial era behind, something that you talk about, and we start moving into more intelligent technologies that work with the environment and have a longer term strategy, then we're finding that new action requires new thought. And it seems that you're defining a new program of thinking here in your book, Brave New Mind. So tell us a little bit more about the book, please, Dr. Maynard.
New action requires new thought. That's wonderful. That really puts it in a nutshell. Well, if you look at this terrible hangover we have from the Industrial Revolution and the imposition of having the Gutenberg press invented so that people began to read and use, perhaps overuse now, their left, so-called left brain, which is the more linear brain. In other words, if you envision a reel-to-reel tape deck, you know that if you want to go to a particular point on that, perhaps a musical cut in an album, you have to either wind the tape forward or backwards.
Yes.
Now, the quantum field, which is a bit, think of it as a sort of a cosmic supercomputer, which has all of the information that has ever existed, and also information that we certainly don't have here in the physical realm. It's not difficult to interface with this. And when we do this, it's analogous to a compact disc, where you can actually just go to any specific point on that CD using the laser reader. So this is analogous to the quantum field. And what happens if you open to the possibilities that the quantum field exists and that anyone can actually connect up with it and start to get inspiration, then it's very easy to just make that move, and new ideas will come trickling down and your world would begin to change. It's almost that simple.
I love the comparison you make of a tape, which is linear forward and backwards, versus a CD where you can jump to different parts of the CD. And it is. We can leap beyond the linear limitations of our mind. Often our limitations are not what we're able to do, but what we're able to think. I've heard the comparison also that a fish cannot understand that the 2 feet standing in the pond are part of the same system. But when you think outside of the limitations as you perceive them, then you can understand that there's integrations in their systems, and we can do that and understand omnipresence, where everything is anywhere at the same time, and maybe even tap into what's called the Akashic Record, where everything that has happened, is happening, and will happen is there. So limitations are in the models we construct, so we have to have a new program for our mind, don't we?
Yes, we do, and it's fairly common knowledge with people who are very intuitive or psychically sensitive that things have speeded up so fast, actually exponentially and vibrationally, that we now no longer need to sit in a cave for 30 years to gain some kind of real understanding and enlightenment, because others have already done this, and they've done it to the extent that now, with the vibrational frequency raised, it's very simple, and this sort of thing can be achieved instantly. And a very simple way to do this is to imagine a switch in your mind. Mm-hmm. And we are taught in the linear way, in the Industrial Revolution way, historical way, not to believe anything we can't prove to be true.
Right.
And the can't prove to be true involves all kinds of scientific gobbledygook and statistics, etc., ad infinitum. Now, if you simply open the switch to the other position where you do not disbelieve anything you cannot prove to be untrue, a whole world opens up for you. It's that simple.
I love that inversion there. You know, Rene Descartes pointed out that you cannot prove that you exist. And somebody says, well, you see me. Well, just prove that I see you. How do you know? Well, I'm looking at you seeing me. Well, that doesn't work. That's a cyclical definition. You haven't proved you exist. So how does what you see count as a premise, and on and on? So you're absolutely right. Unless we accept the philosophy as you're describing it, we cannot accept our own existence.
Well, yes. Therefore I am. Actually, what seems to have happened in modern times is that a large number of global society has chosen, instead of facing the truths that they're being exposed to, which are removing them from their comfort zones, instead they would like to couch themselves in denial. And they've made this denial a very elaborate kind of ritual, in case you haven't noticed in the news and all of this. And so what's happened, it seems, tongue-in-cheek, that humans have, a majority of the humans now have become caricatures of their self, of their true self.
Wow, you're right. You're right.
So we're a bunch of cartoon figures here. There are a lot of them are running around.
I agree, because we're not realizing ourselves. If we're not realizing our potential, it's because we're not realizing ourselves, because we're not aware on the subtle level. And when we become aware of the subtle level, we begin to believe in the invisible. Sound a little far out there? Well, let's point out that ancient Sanskrit tells us that from the unmanifest comes the manifest. And that sounded a bit far out until recently in the field of quantum science, something that you are talking about in your work, that now they're talking about dark matter, and they're saying, hey, most of all the observable universe is invisible. In fact, everything that we can see and touch and feel and whatever is just a small portion of it. There's dark matter and there's dark energy, which is beyond our reach. And so now we're starting to see, as Fritjof Capra said in the Tao of Physics, that there is a comparison between the physical evidence of the world around us and what the ancients were saying in the scriptures. So when we start becoming a little more aware, we can start believing in the invisible, set the limitations beyond where we were, and go on. And, you know, I'm going through your works, Dr. Maynard, and you're doing a magnificent job of doing that. You've laid it out for us. And, you know, you talk about we don't have to be 30 years in a cave anymore. We can have instant allegories, if you will. You mentioned also the 100th monkey syndrome. If there is a consciousness, if there's such a thing as all boats rising with the tide, if there's a rising tide of consciousness, if we are in a unified field, a morphogenetic field and all, then we are interconnected. Can you give us a little description of the 100th monkey syndrome?
Yes. Some years ago, a group of Japanese scientists were studying the behavior of monkey colonies on a little island called Fukushima Island off mainland Japan. Mm-hmm. And they would routinely feed them sweet potatoes. They'd come probably in a boat and dump the sweet potatoes in the sand for them. One day, one of the monkeys, one of the younger ones, the scientists are observing this, they saw one of the younger monkeys start washing the sweet potato in the nearby stream and thus cleaning the sand off. And they began watching the troop, and pretty soon the younger one taught the mother that trick. And in a little time, the other monkeys in the troop began to learn it. And this went on fairly slowly for a number of months, and then all of a sudden all the monkeys on that island were able to do this. Like, instantly it happened. There was a critical mass achieved. But amazingly, this is a quantum event, because on an island which was 50 or 75 miles away, where there was another monkey colony, all the monkeys there started doing the same thing.
You mean they didn't all get together and have a meeting and
No meetings, no committees, nothing like that. It just happened. And this has been also documented with certain other phenomena. So essentially what it means is that when you have first usually one leader that has a breakthrough, has something special that they can do, and then when a certain number of people learn to do this thing, a critical mass is achieved, and it happens instantly everywhere. And suddenly the consciousness is shifted. So that's essentially what the 100th monkey phenomenon is. And the figure 100 is only theoretical. We know that when some sort of critical mass is reached, whatever that is, it goes quantum.
That is fascinating. Dr. Maynard, are we on the verge of a critical mass right now, precipitating a quantum leap of consciousness in the world?
Absolutely. We're right in the middle of it. And I am sensing some of the fear and resistance to the things that are going on, this Ebola thing and other things like chemtrails and the unrest in the Middle East, the falling currencies in two or three countries. And essentially what we need to do is to have that, is to get that critical mass of leaders. Now, leaders, when I speak of leaders, I speak of grassroots, every single person who makes even a small commitment to try to make this world a little better and not buy into the doom and gloom scenarios will succeed in raising things enough so we will be able to survive. I tend to be an incurable optimist.
Well, I think that the world is beginning to catch up to you, because of all the crises that you mentioned, as well as the ones we've been through recently, the study of cycles suggests that these are often the birth pangs of a new era. I mean, if we take analogy of an era of civilization with the lifetime of a person, well, good heavens, if a baby being born and screaming and crying and going through a transition of birth were to set its expectations of its entire life based on the trauma of that day, it would not have a right picture. Things move in cycles. As you describe how we're cleaning up the mess that we made of the industrial era with technologies that are improving and working smarter instead of with more force, you also say that we have a rising tide of consciousness and we're more awareness. So I believe that intellectually and emotionally we're rising. You describe a number of core paradigms that we're going into. Do you want to touch a little bit about the paradigms that we're going into? We've all been hearing that there's a paradigm shift coming. But as I read through your work, Dr. Maynard, and you explain it so well, I'm beginning to understand that the paradigm shift is here. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, that's very, very, very important for those of us who really want to make a change, a positive change in the human consciousness, that we have a firm conviction of that. Yes, things are changing very fast. The paradigm is shifting. I do make an analogy in the book to industrial age linear paradigms as essentially being boxes. And when anyone stepped out of that box or pushed the envelope a little hard, people like Galileo and others were severely chastised or roasted over the coals.
Right.
And some things, this still has continued in our modern times, with, for instance, with the discovery of cold fusion by scientists Fleischmann and Pons, who were ridiculed by scientists who should have known better, and their work was later validated by the Office of Naval Research in their spare time. But some knee-jerk reactions of professors in power who are afraid, apparently, of change or being shifted too much from their comfort zone reacted very strongly to this. Now, the new paradigms, instead of being a box, I envision them as being evolvable. They can continue to grow. They can bud off, and new paradigms can be created. So they're infinite. They go on infinitely, and there's never a tight box enclosure, so people can keep involving themselves in the process of co-evolution.
Yes, I understand what you say. Dr. Maynard, I also want to ask you about the Arcos Cielos Research Center, which can be found at arcoscielos.com. Let me spell that. ARCOSCIELOS.com, arcoscielos.com, which is described as New Paradigms in Science, Education, Fine Arts, Global Ecology, and Human Potential. Can you tell us a little bit about the center, please, Dr. Maynard?
Yes, we've this was founded about, 1970, so it's been quite a while, and essentially we've been focusing on trying to take to gather up existing information on new energy, new solutions for global ecology, new ways of thinking, and especially new ways of thinking and doing. And we did some work with the Aerospace Technology Working Group, which was a group of scientists which had a series of teleconferences. Several years ago, we co-sponsored a conference here. These people, interestingly, many of them were ex-NASA employees or some still with NASA, National Science Foundation, professors of various universities, and others, even some from the military. So it was very interesting to listen to these scientists, and one of the things all of us had to learn was to be able to listen, because only one person could talk at a time. So this is one of the things we have done, and essentially we are trying to use the information that I have acquired here to help other people, because one of the deals with getting wisdom and enlightenment, which you usually acquire through the school of hard knocks, is that when you reach a certain point, you really need to start sharing it with others or you won't continue to evolve. It's an offer you can't refuse, in a sense.
And people are listening more now. I think we're ready for that because we are in a transitional time. And it may seem like chaos, but when we look at the Chinese symbol for chaos, for crisis, they use two symbols. One is opportunity put over top of the symbol for danger. Danger and opportunity at the same time. And that's where we are. The danger will pass and the opportunity will remain for many generations. And that's why some of the leading things that you're doing are going to carry on as we make this transition. And I think we're going to be hanging on to some of these things. On your site at arcoscielos.com, there's many things to go through and find. One of the things that catches my eye are the projects. I want to read just a few of the projects that are listed on the site that people can learn about, such as the Future Science Technology, Global Ecology Project, University of the Future Project, Paraphysical Fitness, Future Science Art, The Magnificent Engines of Gaia, Gaia Energy, the energy of the world, New Transformative Paradigms, and I want to mention, Dr. Maynard, two books on the site that can be found. They're written by you, Transforming the Global Biosphere, as well as Life Management 3000. But since we're mentioning books, Dr. Maynard, your new book that is coming out is just emerging right now. How can people get your book, Brave New Mind, right now on the eve of it being launched worldwide?
It is scheduled to be put up on Amazon.com as an ebook, so it can be read with your tablets or cell phones. So the other thing is that the hard copy just arrived, so it is only available right now at the website, and I can give you the email if you wish to contact for a fresh copy. Brand new copy.
Yes, please tell us that address, Dr. Maynard. How can people find out about the book in the meantime?
It's just Arcoscielos, that same word together, ArcoscielOS at yahoo.com. The same as the website, just that word, at yahoo.com.
It's amazing when I go through the things described in this book, because in so many programs here on the Cycles of Change program, we have been talking about where we're coming from, where we are, and where we're going in general, in terms of the influence of energy, some speculation as to what it might be leading to. But you're describing exactly the same thing, and it's interesting. We're both looking at the same star and seeing the same light, from different perspectives, and it's almost a 100th monkey sort of thing going on here as well. Oh, you've done a beautiful job.
It is, truly, truly.
That's true. So we're just a couple of monkeys, what can I say? But in any case, you're doing a wonderful job of actually spelling it out in detail and giving a great description of the consciousness and making references to the schools of thought that are out there. Do you think there's a defining consciousness that's leading the way in all of this as we go into the 21st century? What is setting the pace now, and is there a rally of support of people getting on board? That's a bit of a vague question, but I'd like to hear how you address it.
Well, I'd like to go to the second part. There is a rally of support, and here in Sedona, Arizona, which is a very a center for healing and all kinds of psychic technologies. There are many, many people who are writing books, giving presentations. These are experienced professionals I'm talking about, not just wannabe New Age people. This is getting to be very serious business, for the simple reason that if we do not open ourselves to applying these new, I'll use the term consciousness technologies or psychic technologies, you can think traditional, more traditional technologies or ways of thinking, we are not going to survive the next 100 years. It's that simple.
You're absolutely right. Folks, you're listening to the Cycles of Change radio program here at blogtalkradio.com/cycles, as we're talking with Dr. Elliot Maynard of the Arcoscielos Research Center. We're discussing new paradigms in science, education, fine arts, global ecology, and human potential development. And we're also discussing the launch of his new book, just soon coming out, Brave New World, Living in a Future Science World. Well, things come in cycles. This is what's due now. But if things do come in cycles, Dr. Maynard, are we embarking on original thought, or are we catching up with the past? And are we relearning things that just didn't seem to carry over into the machine age? Are we touching on old wisdoms and finding new ways to apply them? Where are we in the scheme of time, if the past, the present, and the future are all interconnected?
Well,
the questions get more vague as we go along, by the way.
the interfacing between ancient and modern, the fact that these are merging too, because we have a bit of arrogance with our so-called civilized, first world attitude, and it's only been two centuries, essentially, where we've really started to upgrade the technology, and really only in maybe the last 50 or 60 years, it's gone exponential. But the interesting thing is, as we do this, the indigenous or traditional technology which has existed, if I can use that term, technology, the wisdom, the healing, the consciousness, rituals that people did to protect themselves, developing their intuitive senses for hunting and gathering food and essentially survival. These existed for millions of years. So there is a certain arrogance in us thinking that we are evolved when, with this sort of superimposed, very recent, computerized kind of learning. Yes, it's wonderful, and it's very evolved, but it needs to be blended very, very carefully and thoughtfully with the ancient wisdom for us to continue to survive.
It's one thing to develop a tool, and it's another thing to know how to use it wisely. And after some of the mistakes and some of the ecological problems that we're having, we're beginning to realize that maybe we haven't used them in the best way. And so now as we reprogram our models of thought and we restructure how we're going to do our businesses, then, well, we can do things differently. The world is flat now. We're living more in international communities. We don't have to be as nationalistic and competitive. We don't have to pronounce reality as reality. And understanding the profits isn't always spelled P-R-O-F-I-T. It can be P-R-O-P-H-E-T. So are we, it was Deepak Chopra, who agrees with you, by the way. He believes that we're on the verge of critical mass and evolutionary leap. He said that we will look anthropologically, we'll go along at a very slow pace for a long time, advancing slowly. And then inexplicably, we just take this leap. And all of a sudden, we advance greatly in our abilities, our civilization, so forth. And again, long time, we advance slowly, take another leap. He believes we're about to take another one of those leaps. What do you think, Dr. Maynard?
Oh, I feel very, very, I have a deep conviction of this, and I really can't put it into words, but it is a result of being very sensitive to what is coming out all over the world in the news and the sorts of things that are happening and the various cycles that are in conjunction now. And I was going to ask you a question. If in your studies, has there ever been a time when you've seen new cycles, entirely new cycles created? Because I think that is what's going to happen. Now, this may be the result of two or many cycles kind of coming into conjunction, you know. So this is like what happens with the big waves that happen in the ocean when several different frequencies coincide and summate. In other words, they pile up and become a great big wave.
Yeah, and they do believe that it's wave harmonics that will create a rogue wave of immense proportions. And I believe that such things have happened in history, but I don't have enough data from ancient history to be able to identify such a time. And these waves are so great and would happen so infrequently that it would have happened long before now. And I would scarcely have a way to be able to account for it. What I have seen in the times more recently that we can account, the times when the cycles of known properties reset. An example of that would be in Japan after the very horrific experience of Hiroshima and so forth. And that apparently reset the cycles. And in some cases, a nation can have internal rhythms for many generations, and then at a great revolution, they will begin at a new starting point. Same cycles, but the clock gets reset. An example would be the American Revolution here in North America. And that was the beginning of the internal clock of rhythms here in the United States that have been running ever since. So, but that is a very intriguing question that you asked, Dr. Maynard. And, you know, maybe that in some way could account for the inexplicable leaps in our evolutionary progress. Perhaps it's a convergence of harmonics. Not a harmonic convergence, as Aguirre-Lys described, but a convergence of harmonics. I like that question, and you've given me a great takeaway from this conversation, Dr. Maynard.
Yes, well, we tend to think when we see a tracing on an oscilloscope, you know, of anything, a heartbeat or music, and of course these cycles are expressed in the same way, and they form the classical sine wave, either compressed or stretched out. But we fail to realize many times that these waves are actually spherical in nature. If you think of a string and expanding out into the universe and then getting thinner and thinner, you know, or less dense, each one of these sounds or cycles expands and contracts to nothing and then expands spherically. So when you begin to see it that way, you see how the different spheres can start to interact with each other, and that's a whole new phenomenon that not many people have even really probably thought about. But it brings fascinating possibilities.
Well, that's why we have planets. Things accrete. Dust just keeps amassing and picking up more matter until they turn into spheres. If you throw water up in the air, it turns into spheres. If you take salt granules into space, they begin to coagulate into clumps, and they eventually start to form something resembling spheres. So if there's a cyclical nature, we can go beyond the one-dimensional sinusoidal graph thinking and realize that if we're living in a three-dimensional world, the cycles are really spheres.
And yes, it's interesting. It's kind of fun because it alters your perception just enough so you can really think about the things that we've kind of been repeating rote on picking up from the literature, you know, and probably because of our academic training, you know, we've been putting that into a nice little cookie, and all of a sudden, when you start to move away from it and see it from a slightly different perspective, it becomes something other than a cookie, you know.
Quite, and this is what you talk about, of not being so linear as to be thinking like a cassette tape, where you have to go forward or backward in a linear fashion, but jumping across the disk, but or taking another dimension. What if we could go from the linear tape to the disk and take the disk and go to a sphere? Then we're understanding a little bit more, and we can pick up on a subtle level, a greater consciousness, the things you're talking about, and not be so limited. And when we're not so limited, we won't think that we're the biggest thing in the universe and have the arrogance we've had, perhaps.
This would be wonderful to be taught in elementary school, wouldn't it? If children had this kind of opportunity and were given that kind of environment to just expand, you know, push their buttons a little bit to stimulate them to expand their thinking in unusual, in imaginary ways, all kinds of interesting things come out of that you can really ground right down into the physical.
Well, maybe we will move away from assembly line education to prime our students for a machine age world. I mean, after all, you talk about China's super psychic children, and then we have the indigo children. So, you know, the new future science applications of psychic technology are going to require a new education for people to handle that. So, how are we going to make this transition? Are we resisting? Is the old order trying to hang on to what we have? Are people embracing it? How do you see people receiving these new thoughts?
Every time, and history has proven this too, every time anyone pushes the envelope just a little bit too far with a new scientific discovery or a new concept, there will be a certain percentage of people, and it's fairly large, that will suddenly act irrationally and give a kind of a knee-jerk reaction because it simply upsets them. They have a fear of change. There is a great fear of change in most people. So it's very important for us to teach our children and try to teach ourselves not to fear change, but when we have some kind of a situation that might involve fear or it's a daunting situation, it's better to face up to it and deal with it, because after you do that, then you can relax and go on to the next problem. You might get knocked down a few times, but you learn how to get up and keep going. And I'm sure that when people reach a certain age, all of us have had that experience.
We certainly have. And Copernicus would most certainly agree with you. But now, as we're overcoming fear and shifting into a positive co-evolutionary mindset, I agree with you that we are leapfrogging into a new consciousness. And what are the catalyst agents of this global social consciousness that we're going on? You speak of transformers as catalytic agents in this transition. What do you mean by that, Dr. Maynard?
Catalytic agents are facilitators, essentially. And one of the most wonderful ways to level the playing field and watch humans become humans is to get a group of musicians together, playing together, and all of the ethnic and religious and national backgrounds are forgotten. There's a Palestinian-Israeli orchestra, for instance, and, of course, the Seeds of Peace camp. When you get people together doing art, during cultural presentations such as the dance and performance, the martial arts, even sports to a certain degree, although that tends to be a little bit more ego-oriented. But you, all of a sudden, when you get a group of scientists together, I've witnessed this many times, and especially if they're just relaxing and maybe having some drinks together or whatever, all those things are forgotten, and they get so enthusiastic when they find someone from another country that understands and has been working on a similar project as theirs that all those boundaries are forgotten. So it does happen, and so the catalyst comes in with creating these kinds of events or opportunities for people to meet on common grounds, even though they may have differences, other differences.
Well, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash told us that we all dream in the same language. And the example you mentioned, music, that is certainly the most universal language that we write in and that we express ourselves as well. And as the boundaries come down, as we go, well, the last century I describe as a physical high, touring an intellectual low of energies, and we outbuilt our own sense. Now those energies are reversing, going down into a physical low, which means, as you say, we're cleaning it up after the party before. Party was the Industrial Revolution. While the emotional, intellectual energies are rising, our hearts are opening, our minds are opening, and we're finding a way to do things. We're not working harder, we're working smarter. Thank goodness, it seems a little bit overdue, but cycles of time tell me it's actually due right now. So this is where we are. And you work with oceanography, you work with education itself, and so the old paradigms, the old structures of education are not equipped with this, so I think we're going to see them transforming too. But what I'm noticing more and more is that people are really becoming more interested in things that are greater and outside of themselves, and Americans are becoming more interested in what's happening internationally than just what affects us here at home. And they're becoming a little bit more expanded. So we have room now for a global consciousness, and the power shifts are happening around the world to adapt for that. And so are we going to be seeing the same world in 30 years? Is it going to be dramatically different than what we're seeing right now, Dr. Maynard?
I think it's going to be dramatically different. Now, the kinds of changes that are the deepest changes are the hardest ones, I think, for us already entrapped in a certain, certain social drama and game, whatever you want to call it, a consciousness. They're very profound. Now, the internet itself is miraculous. When you think now that each person who has access to a computer in the world essentially has the Library of Alexandria squared, or to the X power. in there, they can go and data mine anywhere in the world, essentially.
That's right.
It's amazing. And the internet never sleeps. It does not really recognize national or religious boundaries. You know, each group might have its own little forum, but you can come or go as you choose or ignore it. And so it's really wonderful. And just to think you can put a set of encyclopedias in a compact disc, and video gaming technology, creating virtual worlds, has fantastic possibilities as an educational tool. And, you know, it can be used to go places where the human body requires a lot of protection. You could be walking on the moon using something similar to Google Earth. We already have a Google Moon, but I'm speaking of a real sort of virtual environment created from actual photographs on the moon or Mars. So all of this is not too distant in the future. And this could happen within 30 years, you mentioned.
You know, it's a good example, because if you went back 60 years ago and you tried to describe all the things that you said to the average person on the street and said that this is what they were going to be doing, you say that's a little far-fetched. Maybe in a couple thousand years we could do that. Well, and how about these guys in the Google trucks that are doing Google Earth mapping? And they went back 60 years ago and they said, oh, we were off on an expedition photographing. What were you photographing? Earth. And it's all mapped out. You can go anywhere. You can turn in every direction. And look, it's absolutely mind-blowing. So we actually have leapfrogged already, but the leapfrogging is only beginning. So we're going to see an entirely different world. It's not going to be mechanized. We're going to have a free exchange of ideas across open boundaries. We're going to think a little bit more of not just what can we do, but what do we want to do based on what we should do. And that may be one of the biggest shifts that we have. So there is a change in consciousness coming. And tell me a little bit about the name Arcos Cielos of Arcos Cielos Research Center. How did you get your name, Dr. Maynard?
Well, when my former wife and I discovered Sedona, we drove down. It was actually Christmas Day, and saw a triple rainbow over a big red rock formation, which we can view from this property. And we looked at the property we're now on and where we founded Arcos Cielos. And that rainbow inspired us to use the word Arcos Cielos, which is sort of connotates a rainbow. But also, these are bridges in understanding, bridges between ancient and modern technologies, bringing the two together and using the best of both to create a synergy. Future science music, which involves conscious interaction with the instruments, and there are other facets like channeling, which can be used as a legitimate resource for saving millions of dollars, solving problems, and getting information we cannot get elsewhere. And I just wanted to add, from your remarks before, one thing sticks in my mind. I went to a session with this man called Daryl Anka, who channels an entity named Bashar. And I actually got to meet Daryl, and I was able to question the entity on actually when I was writing this book on ways to proceed. And one of the interesting things he said, Bashar, was if you brought a human from today, took him back 100 years, and in the consciousness that existed 100 years ago, that person would glow, would be glowing with light. And that stuck in my mind. It was just something that I thought I would just throw in for some of your listeners, because it really stuck in my mind. And that would be the proof of the pudding. Unfortunately, as George Carlin says, we have lots of movies of the past, but we don't have them of the future, so people don't talk about the future very much. But it would be nice to be able to go back into the past from the future and see that effect.
Well, when you talk about going beyond nonlinear thought and accessing fourth-dimensional consciousness, let me throw in that term as well, there really is such a thing as the past, the present, and the future all happening at the same time. You have omnipresence, you have omnipotence, and we can perhaps actually tap into these energies as well. Channeling, after all, is using the internet without a computer. And you mentioned Bashar. I've seen videos of the man you speak of, and so I heard Bashar speaking through him, and it was absolutely phenomenal. And in the particular videos that I saw, there were people in a group that would ask questions, and they would ask a question, and Bashar would give the answer, and he would begin speaking immediately in response. And the answers are absolutely profound. And
I know, and
it didn't require
time to think
about it. He's an
amazing comedian, too. He's quite a comedian. Yeah. He's like a Shakespearean actor, and I thought he was a wingnut the first time I just heard the recording. But when I saw him and experienced that, absolute, you know the statement in the Bill of Rights or Constitution that says, these truths are self-evident. When you hear the truth, this is one thing I would love to leave your audience with. When you get to a certain stage in life, you get to know the truth. It's absolute. You can't really talk too much about that absoluteness, but that's what you need to hang your hat on. Don't go by other people's opinions. I urge everyone, try this yourself and go by your own intuition, because you will know when things are right.
You're absolutely right, and we can recognize it within ourselves, and we can get a little closer to that by using our mind along the way. You can find out a little bit more about this by visiting Dr. Maynard's site at arcoscielos.com to learn more about the Arcos Cielos Research Center. You're going to see books and projects there. Two of the books are written by him, and he has a new book coming out that I invite everybody to find out more about. Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World, and it covers some of the things we talked about here and goes on far, far beyond. And in the closing remarks, since you mentioned George Carlin, in one of his skits that are somewhat philosophical, he said, some people say the glass is half empty, some say it's half full. He says the glass is too big. And so in that, he's pointing out that there's always an alternative way of thinking beyond the linear concepts that we have, getting out of old polarities and realizing that there's more beyond the models in our mind. Dr. Maynard, do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners who are going to be finding out a little bit more about the work that you've been doing these many years?
Well, yes, the use of a little humor and a few stories. I threw in some of my growing up stories because I found them so bizarre myself, and I look back that I thought it would be fun to share with other people. But this diffuses the fear and makes people feel a little bit more comfortable working with these new concepts, because I understand there's resistance. You can't help this. This is something that is not easy to overcome. And the one thing that, well, I like to tell people, if they really want to improve things, the state of humans, you begin with yourself, but number one, you can do a good turn for somebody every day, like the Boy Scouts say. And then two, you try to make a place a little nicer. In other words, pick something up or tidy something up, make the place a little nicer than you found it. And three is try to create win-win situations. And this could be in personal life and business, because it's a very enthralling, happy experience when you can do this, because both people walk away happy. Now, if you work in the quantum field perspective, as you have suggested, you begin to think, how about a win-win-win? It's possible to create a three-win situation where you're working with three parties. But bring that to win, to the win squared, and then win to the X power. And that win to the X power means you can start with an idea. It can go out to the world either as a thought form, possibly a prayer, or an idea or a video that goes on the internet, or a snippet of music. And if it goes viral, that's exactly what's happening. Win to the X power. And the other thing that I like to tell people, because most of the people that you mentioned who will be the leaders of the future, and the answer that came to me was all of us. And it was through a channeling session that I heard from an Arcturian council that said, we are the ones we have been waiting for. And I started to share that with other people, and then I started to see it all over the internet, and eventually President Obama used that in the speech. But it was such a profound thing at the time that it brought tears to my eyes, because I began to think about this, and I began to think how important it is that we can finally begin to like ourselves and then maybe love ourselves enough to receive this new information and these gifts from the quantum field, because they're very real. We can play, we can make a game of it, that makes it nice. But the other thing is that all of us have been through a lot of you-know-what to smell the roses, and that that makes us tough. It's like the tempering of a samurai sword.
Indeed, indeed. Simple steps that can have exponential change in the world, but then simplicity breeds complexity. We live in an interconnected holographic universe, and what happens anywhere can influence everything everywhere. And you make it seem all so understandable. Dr. Elliot Maynard of the Arcos Cielos Institute, I thank you very much for joining us tonight on the Cycles of Change program. Well, thank you, folks, for listening. This has certainly been an ear-opening experience, and I invite you to find out more, because this is just a sample of some of the things that are covered in his works and on his site. And may we all be part of it, because really what we're learning here is about ourselves. David Katzmeier from the Cycles of Change radio program. Until next week, good night.